You are listening to www.infinitesmile.org. Enjoy these Zen-inspired talks given by Michael McAllister, followed up by question and answer exchanges with groups of his students.
So if you want the Reader's Digest version of enlightenment, the path to enlightenment, it's that we let go of absolutely everything and then let all of our activity be informed by that surrender. We let go of absolutely everything and then let all of our activity be informed by that surrender. Okay, so we're done. All right, we can go home now. Yeah. It is a little bit more simple, I think, than our ego would like to have us believe. Our ego wants to make sure that this is difficult, that it's challenging, and it is. To be fair, it is. But ego wants to make sure it's not only challenging, but that it's an impossibility. Because as long as ego can make sure that this path along the a path toward awakening, I guess we could call it, is fraught with such danger and so many impediments and obstacles that there is no way you can get it. As long as ego can do that, ego can remain in charge of all of our activity. And if ego, or the small self, is in charge of all of our activity, there's no way that the big self, or the deep surrender, the deep singularity, the infinite, God, spirit, whatever you want to call it, there's no way that can crack the shell of the small self, or ego, or the contraction, or the separation. So our work here, when we try to let go and then let that surrender inform all of our activity, begins with a compassionate approach to what we're doing here, a stillness practice. This is a great way of being good to yourself. And what happens is, when you are good to yourself, there is a spaciousness, almost a volcanic, spontaneous eruption within your own heart that allows kindness and compassion out and into the world. Well, I mean, what you sow, you will reap. It's a very, very simple little rule of the universe. If you approach a stillness practice with compassion, it'll come out of you. The stillness practice will also lead into a place of wisdom. And that wisdom is that you and I are not separate, that we are all one thing. And that one thing arises continually for all time. For all time. And for all time, another way of saying that is right now. And right now. And right now, again and again and again and again. The now, the present moment, if you want to call it that, is all there is. The rest is just mind. The present moment, this moment right here, is all there is. The rest is a construct of our mind, either some future orientation or some past experience. Those only survive in the mind, but they're also only ever experienced in the now. If you have a memory, in other words, when does your memory arise? Always in the now. If you have a future plan, or if you have stress or anxiety or bliss, when does that arise? In the now. And so what we begin to do is, in a compassionate stillness practice, we start to actually recognize this very nowness of all things. And this very nowness is without the boundary of time. The now has no boundary, except our own mind. Our own mind does not want to be in the now, because that means suddenly the small self is out of control. And what is it trying to do? It's always trying to defend against the big self kind of crashing through. So the compassionate stillness practice actually allows for the crashing through. And it can be really uncomfortable. It can also be really beautiful. It usually gets really beautiful really quickly in a person's practice, usually right towards the beginning. Things get really neat. It becomes a sensual experience of bliss. Oh man, it was so great. I saw these pretty colors, or, you know, I couldn't even feel my body. It was like I was levitating. Great, wonderful. That, like everything else, is temporary. So make sure you don't attach to a meditation practice and think that it's only going to bring you bliss, because what it really will do is bring that bliss, but it will also bring a deeper sensitivity to all things. Not only bliss, but also pain and discomfort. So it doesn't always feel good. And this is where the compassion comes in. Can we compassionately, can we tenderly approach a sitting practice? And with friends, can we just be still, come hell or high water, whether or not it's comfortable, whether or not it's painful, can we still just take this time to be in the present moment and uncover and discover that everything is precisely one thing, and one thing is precisely everything, all at one time. And what's in the middle of that arising and that falling? An awakened space that we call you, that we call me. That gets uncovered. That singularity gets uncovered in the stillness practice. And so we become closer to that which has always informed us, that spirit that has always informed us, that awareness that is at the root and at the core of every single thing that we and others are about. It just spontaneously shows up. Wei Nung in the Platform Sutra, I've used this quote before, but it really relates to what we're talking about here. He said, "At this moment, there is nothing which comes to be. In this moment, there is nothing which ceases to be. Thus, there is no birth and death to be brought to an end. Thus, absolute peace in this present moment, though it is at this moment, there is no boundary or limit to this moment, and herein is eternal delight." You know, he's saying a lot there. But basically, there is eternal delight the moment we uncover, we discover that there is no boundary between self and other, between this or that, between right or wrong, between black or white, between male, female. It's all one thing. Having said that, we better recognize from that place of all one thingness that there is black and there is white, there is male, there is female, there is right, there is wrong. The dualism exists, but is our relationship to those opposites clinging, or is it intimate and open? Not an embrace that squeezes and clings, but an embrace that comes from deep within the heart and expresses itself as an open, loving expansiveness. That occurs spontaneously, volcanically, when we rest in the present moment, where there is no boundary. We live typically from a position of very intense separation. I am whatever it is behind my face. Sometimes that's the way it feels. I'm behind my face, and everything else is other. Everything else is out there, right? And sometimes we're even divorced from our bodies. It's like I live from behind my face, and my body is down there somewhere, you know? We don't even inhabit our own bodies. What do we tend to inhabit? We tend to inhabit and live from right here. And that's fine, but it's just really limiting. That is the separation. I mean, we're not only separated from our brothers and sisters and other humans and other animals and other living systems, but we are actually separate from within. We compartmentalize. And we're good at this in the West. If you look, for instance, at most Western philosophy is about compartmentalizing, you know? It's about dualism, this or that. And what we're trying to do is recognize, okay, that's fine, but that's only part of the story. There's another whole aspect to the story, which is to expand beyond the dualism that you can find whenever you go into the present moment. That you can find whenever it is that you absolutely let go of everything and let all of your activity get informed by that and through that surrender. So is there a way out of this separation? Is there a way out of this, you know, life is tough, then you die, existential angst, you know, that whole deal? The good news is, yes, there is a way out. The bad news is it takes a lot of attention. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of unlearning, which is just as hard as learning. There won't be a final exam until you die, so we've got some time, hopefully. But it's a different kind of schooling. It's about how much you can unlearn, how much of the habitual inertia that you bring into your life keeps you from being just an ordinary person. Just an ordinary person without anything extra. So I'm going to give you the bare bones here in the next couple of minutes, and then I'd love to open it up to question and answer. One of the cool things about this tradition is that it's predicated on the give and take of one another, of teacher, student, of you, me. And in that meeting, we actually start recognizing, hopefully, that there isn't a boundary. So it's a very, very active, interactive approach towards the apprehension of the infinite. So here's the plan, okay? First of all, we recognize that our wisdom really comes from the realization, not just the intellectual understanding, but the realization that there is no boundary ultimately. That I am identical to you, and I am identical to that structure way in the back there, and I am identical to the lamp in this beautiful painting, except for organization and energy. The only difference between any of us and the trees outside, organization and energy. If we look at it right down to the quantum level, there isn't much difference. We are all just a throbbing mass of particles that dance in such a way that they create this thing that we call you and we call me. Then the mind comes in and starts to compartmentalize. Okay? So what we need to do is come up with an understanding. The wisdom is, in essence, a realization or an understanding without any type of contraction or attachment or anything. It's the understanding that all things, every single thing, every single idea, every single sensation, anything that can be identified has three aspects to it. And those three aspects that I keep hammering again and again and again are that there is an interdependent nature for all things. All things depend on other things to be themselves. Now, despite the fact that in this culture we look at independence as being really, you know, what we're about. We are rugged individuals. We are all about what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, stay the hell away from me. Good fences make good neighbors, another way of saying that. Good boundaries create great separation. Great separation creates peace and harmony and love. And pass me the ammunition, please, because that'll help me be a little bit of a better neighbor too. I'm mocking, of course, but it's a very, very interesting thing. All things are interdependent. I can be independent so long as there is gravity, clean air, and clean water. I depend on those things. I actually also wouldn't be here unless you were here. Otherwise, I would just sit on my cushion at home. Everything is dependent on something else. When you take an orange, next time you bite into an orange or a raisin or a banana, can you taste all the things that interdependently co-created that piece of fruit? Can you actually taste the sunshine in that banana? Can you taste the tropical rain? Can you taste the kiss of the person who cut the bananas out of the tree? You can feel pain. Absolutely. Absolutely. You become more sensitized. All right? But that pain, while it is an intense feeling, okay, it is interdependent on your mind for giving it a label. Let me explain that. Anything that I feel is intensity until I give it a name. In other words, intensity that I feel and I can't quite figure out where to put it, so I run away from it. The minute I push that intensity away, it's called pain. Can you imagine what it would be like to be so intimate with that pain without flinching, just like you sat in meditation without flinching? Can you sit or stand or embrace that pain without flinching, without going after it and indulging it, without pushing it away? Can you just be there for it? Because like all things, this relates to the second quality, it is temporary. It's time bound. You ever notice that nothing lasts forever? Yeah, not even the feeling of pain. It goes away. It might lessen and it might come back. It's kind of like a wave. Have you ever noticed that? The pain is experienced as a wave and then it kind of lessens and it comes back. Same with glory. Same with happiness. Happiness is a thing. It's a feeling, right? Well, if it's a feeling, it's temporary. It's also interdependent on all sorts of causes and conditions that allow it to arise. So our work here, Lorna, is to actually study our pain. Don't run away, but also don't grab it. Oh, I love pain. This will help me. I'll be enlightened if I just embrace it. It doesn't work that way either. We have to be intimate with all things. So everything is interdependent. Everything is temporary. And everything at its core is spirit, even pain. What a radical teaching that is. Every single thing that can be experienced is spirit. There is nothing that is not spirit itself. So that's wisdom. That's the first part. The second part is where we started this talk. It's compassion. Compassion is love without any clinging. It's love without any hate. Have you ever noticed that some people's expression of love can move about that far and it tilts into hate? It's possessive. It's jealous. It just tilts slightly and suddenly it becomes its own opposite. Love, true love, expansive love, non-egoic love, love that comes from the big self, love that is informed by and actually is a representation of the big, deep singularity, has no opposite. It's compassion. Sure.
Can you love in different levels?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those, there are two significant ones. You could probably give them more, but the levels are basically two. You can love from the place that is informed by the thing that clings, ego, the small self. I want for me. This is exclusive. This is special. And you can also love from the place that is totally open, that isn't bound by time, okay? That is not temporary, that is actually the expression of spirit, of God, okay? So on those two levels, and there are varying degrees at which that can be kind of a felt realization. So our compassion then becomes our ability to act. Remember, we talked about how this whole experience, the Reader's Digest version of enlightenment, is basically let go of all things and then let that surrender inform all of your action. What is your action? Your action is to witness your experience. Can you witness your love? Can you witness your pain? Can you witness your hatred, your tension, your angst, your craving of that truffle that's sitting there, looks so dang good? Now, can you just witness that? And then choose. The more we witness, actually, the more compassionate we can be towards all beings, including ourselves. Compassion at the exclusion of yourself is not compassion. It's an egoic negotiation to make the ego feel better. And that's exactly the disease we're trying to cure. So we witness, and in that witness, that witnessing awareness, we begin to actually feel the letting go. That's surrender. We feel the surrender. You don't have to carry it anymore. You don't have to carry your baggage. Tend to it. But your relationship to your baggage doesn't have to be something that you slog around through the muck of your past into the dysfunctional twist and turn and tangle of a future that hasn't even happened yet. Surrender. Let it go. And then act from that place of surrender. And when you can do this, what happens is there's an intimacy that starts to unfold with the all. And when I say the all, I mean it. The all. Everything. There becomes a deep, deep awareness and a deep, deep surrender filled with courage and fearlessness, because there's the recognition that all there is spirit. And you are not separate from it at all. You and your ego and your dysfunction and your enlightenment are not separate from the all. They are not separate from spirit. All we have to do is be free of our mind's identification with boundary, our mind's identification with thoughts, with feelings, and with time. And if we can become intimate with that, if we can become carefully attentive to that, nothing gets caught. nothing gets caught. We actually start to manifest consciously from spirit. Our activity starts to bring out the spirit, not only in ourselves, but in other people. And peace is suddenly not only given a chance, but peace reigns in the kingdom of being an ordinary person. So now's the time, typically, when we have a quick question and answer. We're almost out of time. I took so long at the beginning. But does anyone have anything that struck them? I'm happy to stay for a few extra minutes if you'd like.
Can you talk a little bit about your mind's identification with boundaries? Because you can empathize and lose yourself, or at least that happens to me.
Sure.
When I'm feeling that someone's describing to me and I am feeling the pain and I am feeling the angst and I'm feeling all of that.
It's like you merge with the person's story. So just so I can be really clear with the question, how is it that the mind is identified with boundary?
You're saying that there shouldn't be, that we shouldn't have the boundaries. But I'm wondering if it's just the ego's fear of dying that's causing the angst and feeling the pain and feeling everything and becoming overwhelming.
That's it. That is it. Ego's fear of its own demise keeps it always trying to make sure that its activity comes from a position of defensiveness. Okay? Now, one of the great ways it can be defensive is to feel special. And one of the great ways we can feel special is to dive on a sword for another person at the expense of what is true, real, open, and infinite within us. So we can actually punish ourselves as a way for ego to feel at home. Ego can deal with the familiarity, believe it or not, it can deal with the familiarity of, you know, getting attacked and dealing with that attack much more easily than it can stepping outside from the bunker and holding its arms up ready to endure the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Right? Mm-hmm. Because that's the real fear. So, go ahead and feel. But don't indulge it. And don't run away from it. Be right next to it. Totally open to it. If you cry, you cry. Fine. If you don't, you don't. But being compassionate involves caring for the other and you in the process. Then what you have to offer them is a gift as opposed to some type of imbalance. Something that is informed by an egoic manipulation, however slight and well-intentioned it may be. Instead of it being informed by that, it's informed by an identification with the all, which has precisely no boundaries.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, sir.
When you were talking about the pain or the pain of being present with it and it being impermanent, I find sometimes it doesn't seem like it's impermanent because it comes and you suffer with it and then it goes, you know, and you get some relief, but then it comes back again, you know, and you know, you're, another weekend is ruined because you've got this terrible migraine headache, you know. So the thought in my mind is, Jesus, this is an ongoing thing, and it really sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, but being intimate with that really, that horrible situation, allows for the path away from the pain. This is so counter to what we have learned through all the biology that makes us who we are and so forth. But actually, the next time the migraine happens, the next time that the walls come crashing down on your weekend or whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be, your choices are two. One is basic, or three, I should say. One, do whatever you can to change the situation. Okay? Two, to stay in it, just like you would normally. Deal with it just like you would normally. And number three is to become absolutely, totally, 100% accepting of what is being offered. That takes judgment out of it. Huh, there's a tremendous amount of intensity going on in my... I actually can't see out of my left eye now. It's so intense. Okay? Do not deny the fact that it hurts, but study the hurt. Study the intensity. Running away from it creates the pain. Becoming intimate with it creates a situation or circumstance. That circumstance is a red carpet offering you the kingdom of being a normal person. It's a red carpet right into enlightenment if you can just be with it fully.
What do you mean by change the situation?
Take a lot of Darvon. Take a lot of medication, whatever it is that's going to numb it. I mean, that's one way of doing it. It doesn't bring you any closer to consciousness, though. A migraine has the same ability to wake you up into unquantifiable, blissful, perfect enlightenment, just as does sitting on your cushion for 8 hours. Any and every opportunity for enlightenment is couched in situation. Any circumstance offers you, me, and everybody else a direct path to enlightenment. Everything. Including the migraine, including the fight with your kid or your spouse, including the breakup, including the illness, including death banging at your door. Every bit of it is an invitation. Do we have the courage to accept the invitation? That's why we sit together. And that's why hopefully we'll see all of you next week.